Down, just down on the big island.
That's where Papa had the fish camp. They put up fish camp after Rubu was struck. And there was a lot of people here at the time. And he was cutting logs over here is when I remember who was over there across the river. Mom was fishing and selling fish to these people.
But how long ago was this?
That was 1910, 1911. And they sold some fish here. Then they had a fish down below here, down below the bluff here. There's a big bluff down here. Down below there, they had a fish camp. And Papa put in a wheel, and a whole bunch was there. And then he sold some fish there. And then we moved down. He moved down to 8 miles. That's where we were brought up. Well, he didn't do very much of anything after we moved down beside trapping and fishing. Then they have to put the fish away. There was nothing like a freezing or anything, but they have a dugout where they use for storage, a real old-fashioned dugout.
How was it constructed?
Well, we helped Mama build one summer, and we dug it out and packed all the dirt out, spot maybe 8 by 4 or something like that. And then we dug it down in the ground. We packed that out, and then Papa put the roof on there. Then Mom put birch bark. We had to go over there in island to get birch bark. You peel those birch, take the bark off. They use that for insulation and things that wouldn't leak. So they fixed that up against it, and then we put moss on that. We packed moss forever. This is my sister and I, our big brother. We didn't have no babies. I mean, Mom didn't have no babies. I was the youngest one there for a long time until she got her four little boys. So I was very much of a spoiled brat at the time. But then we had to work with Mom. We were about that big, I guess. We worked like a horse. So she covered that up with moss, then dirt again. And Papa put two pipe out on each side. I don't know what he did that for ventilation, I guess. And then they covered it up again with dirt. So I really don't know how much dirt that was on there. And they had two doors. One about 3 feet out. In between, so that frost will stay in. We used to get ice from across the river in the creeks, way back in the creeks, bring that over there and pile up moss in the moss. We have ice there all summer. And that's where we had the cold storage. You put meat in there and it'll keep for a month. They just hang it up and just keeps there. That's the way those Indians, our people, used to store things away. They put their berries and things in there. That way they don't have to use... I don't know what they did before, but then in my time they used sugar like we do now. And she put very little sugar in those barrels to keep those berries because it's cool in there. Even in the wintertime, Papa go out trapping and sells that. In the summertime, him and my brother cut wood for the steamboat that goes up and down the river. But he used to put up a lot of fish. The fish will catch a lot of fish, and I didn't cut fish at that time. I take care of the house. Papa cut the fish. He didn't believe in little girls cutting fish, I guess, so he just didn't let us cut fish until we got grown up. just him and Mama Cutfish and my brother packs it.
They smoke it?
Mm-hmm. They smoke it. They put it up for dogs and put it up for eating. And then he'd sell some. And that way he gets his grocery in summertime. We always had garden.
What did you have growing in the garden?
No, we had turnips, rutabagas, and carrots, and potatoes. Always a lot of potatoes.
Was all of his income then from the fishing and the vegetables
that you grew? That's it. Papa always had a garden. I don't think I ever lived without garden since then. And very few people has a garden. They just don't believe in it, I guess.
The smokehouse that he built, how did he build his smokehouse then?
He built the first smokehouse that I remember was built of willows. Woven willows. It's a great big, he had one down below here at the bluff. It's a great big smokehouse. Well, for us, we were small. And for us, it was big. But he takes the standard willows and cut inside of it, I guess. Then he takes the willows and just wave it all the way around, only the doorway. All the way up.
So was it round?
No, it was square. And then he put some poles and things for the roof. And then he puts a birch bark on that. They have to go in the woods and bark the birch and use the birch bark for protection, that those don't leak. And they put that on. When he puts it up there, that's quite a project for them. They put it up there and have to weight it down with something, with poles and things that's heavy, to weight it down so that it don't blow over. So there was no problem, no bought material. But later on, when we moved down to the camp, this is the first smokehouse that I remember.
Did only the men build it?
Hmm?
Did only the men work on it?
No, just Papa and his son.
And how long did it take them to build it?
I just don't know. That's quite a project for them, like I say. And they were fishing at the same time, and he always had a wheel. That's the first thing he does, is put in a wheel in the springtime and start catching the fish. But when we moved down to 8 miles, he built them out of, they had a sawmill here then. He built them out of boards. But whipsaw boards, sawmill, lumbers. Because he cut logs with these people here for a long, long time. He got anything he wants. Papa was a great big man.
What was his name?
Big Joe.
What was his last name?
That's all.
Just Big Joe.
Uh-huh, just Big Joe. Yeah, he was a great big man. Big, stout man. Good worker. But we never did live in a village. I don't remember living in a village. We lived down here at about 36 miles, I guess, where I first remember. But we were alone. They had a great big log cabin, two-room log cabin. And they had a nice place there, and Papa always had a little garden. But I don't know why they never lived in a village. We go to see grandmother and our great uncle, go to the village and see them. Every once in a while we go to the potlatch. That was quite a treat for us. So we didn't know too much about how our people was living or what they do or anything, only when we go to see them in the villages. That's very seldom we go there. Pop didn't believe in taking his kids and into the village. And might get sick and all that. So we never did.
Can you describe one of the potlatches that you saw then when you came to town?
The potlatches are where people gather together. And they gather together and all around people come into the village. Anyone that could come to the village, you know, they have to walk or go with the dogs, walk with snowshoes. Summertime they go with boats, and that's pulling boat. No engine, nothing. And they put up a lot of food for that, especially for that. Then they have a feast for several days. They do this for their dead. They put up quite a ceremony for them all the time. To give them up that they're gone, you know.
Did this happen several times a year?
Well, any time that people dies, and there's about 3-4 of them, especially people, you know. Well, they always remember these, and beside the younger ones, and you know. But then if there was an elder people and all that, 3-4 of those will make a potlatch. And they just have songs and dancing and carry on for a week or two, I guess, before they give away all the stuff, the dead people's stuff, and they put in new ones and they potlatch those things amongst themselves.
Where were the potlatches held? In the villages?
Mm-hmm. In the villages. They still do. We have a dinner potlatch, you know, potluck here whenever there's somebody gone, and we do that in memory of them here in Ruby. I started that a few years back when my uncle died.
In the old days when a potlatch was held, how many people might come into Ruby?
Well, they never, this Ruby was all white people. This is a mining town. There was not many native people here at that time. But in villages, all the houses and things were all full. They have to pitch up tent for the ones that got no room for. I couldn't tell you how many people comes, you know. Like I say, it's... Anyone from the small villages would come in to this big potlatch. So that was their way of giving up their dead, that they're gone.
You're talking about a time of when there's a lot of food also for a potlatch. What about the times when there was no food? What happened when, say, people ran out of food? Did your family ever run out of food?
No. I don't remember it. But Papa used to tell us when they run out of food, when they go cross country in wintertime, because there was no fish. That's when he was young. That's a long, long time ago. And he used to tell us about these stories when we didn't want to eat certain things and when we were kids, criticizing the food.
Stories about when people went hungry?
Yeah, and then he'd tell us about when people went hungry. They were so hungry, and a week, a lot of baby died from being hungry. The mother couldn't nurse them anymore. And they have to eat romaine off their sleds and off their snowshoes, and cook that to eat that. And no meat, nothing. Just absolutely nothing. And they'd run into the one that could carry themselves, that could go, would have anything, even a bark off the tree did eat. You know, anything at all, like birds, like squirrel, and like camp robbers and things like that. And they'd go quite a long ways, and they'd go over the hills, and they have to dig off of the hills for moss, caribou moss. And they'd eat that. It's just anything. It's vegetation, you know, the caribou moss is. Just anything to get over on the other divide. And Papa was in that situation twice in his young days. This last time, he said, was when he was married to Mom. They got all hungry. Everybody except a few, you know, but they have to hang on what little they got for their own people.
I'm interested in how you made a living all these years you've been in Ruby. Have you been fishing every summer?
Oh, yes. We fished all those years. For a fact, when I was down at home, when I was living with this old guy, I had the fish. I had probably got the wheel running. I had to do the fishing and cutting the fish and bring it up here and buy grocery with that as a little girl. And then after 23 is when my husband and I got married. I just walked off and got married again. That was my own doing. So we fished. He was a fisherman, and he didn't trap at the time, but when he first got married, because he had some animal farm up here at 2 miles. He had fox and marten. I don't know what else he had. But that was all went away when we got married, and he was fishing. And that's the way he made a living, fishing, trapping, and taking care of dogs and selling. And I was the one that raised them and trained them. So I was pretty good in the dog language. Oh, we fished so much. Sometimes we used, oh gosh, lots and lots of fish.
Were you using a fish wheel or nets?
Yeah, 3 wheels. 1,800, 2,000. And that's going on for 2 weeks at the time. And I'd be down there on a cutting raft for 11 hours sometime. The longest I ever did cut fish was 11 hours. I was young and husky. I didn't mind. I was good at cutting fish. That's the trouble. I used to cut 120 an hour. You cut the set off, split them, and then score them 13 times on each side. 13 scores in those salmon. You ever seen salmon? Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, I was the biggest fish cutter. And I was taught as young, Papa taught me how to cut the fish so that they don't fall to pieces. And when you do that so many times and you just have a feeling, you just go ahead and cut. And you could feel the skin when your knife touches it, when you have a sharp, gotta be sharp. My knife used to be almost like a razor. It's a wonderful thing when you can, you know how to do it. And how many scores and how much meat to each scores, you know. And Papa showed me all this. Yes, we cut millions and millions of fish. And the boat used to stop here at the 2 mile. That's where Albert, Yuriana, and Dolly's I sold them to camp when there was nothing left of it. Everybody walked away with it after my husband died. So I got ornery and just sold it. I wasn't going to cut fish no more after he was gone. I had enough of it. I didn't have no income or nothing when he died. But then I got along fine. I sent my boy through school. He was 11 years old when his dad died. I sent him through school. Had to pay everything. Pay for his school stuff and all that.
What was the cost of dried fish in those days?
12.5 cents a pound. And salmon strip you was lucky if you get 19 cents a pound. Just before Dad died, I think it was 50 cents a pound. That was quite a bit of money for him. We used to put up 2 ton of it. You put up 2 ton of salmon strips now, you'd be rich.
Who bought the salmon strips?
Everybody. Ron Fairbanks, Anchorage, everywhere. See, we used to board the dogs. For the road commissioners, they didn't have too many airplanes those days, and we had to take care of the road commissioners' dogs, and McKinley Parks had a whole bunch of dogs. Each one of those companies had to buy so much fish for a year. You know, so many pounds per dog for a year. And I don't know how many tons of fish they used to buy. 12.5 a pound. Yes. And then he used to put up fish for Fort Yukon. Fort Yukon is where people used to come in from Canada, I guess, somewhere around there. What these Mount Police used to have, and all dogs. And up there was nobody fishing like around here. So we had to put up fish for them. 10 tons of fish, 12 tons of fish. That's why the boat used to stop at the camp to load up the fish. And the Anchorage airplane come in from Anchorage to load up green fish in the summertime. Which I don't know how much he sold those. But just the same, the stuff you buy now for so much, it didn't cost that much at the time. But fur was good price. And we used to catch them. We'd catch them like mice. I guess we were the only one that used to bring in more fur. You can listen to these people around here and how many hundreds of marten they get in the pot.